What is going on, people? How are you doing out there? It's good to see you. Good to hear you. Thanks for coming on board today. This is episode 8. Episode 8 of the Voyager Food and Wine Cast. I'm your host, Jordy. It's going to be back. We had a technical glitch or some kind of malfunction with what was supposed to be the actual episode 8 today. It was supposed to come out a week ago. We do try to release these on Fridays as consistently as we can. But I admittedly am not... I'm not a techie dude. I'm not very savvy with the electronics. In fact, I'm like one of those people that I think needs to have one of those, like copper bracelet things, because I'll like go to do something on a computer or a radio or anything that has wires, and like it just tends to baffle me or not work in some way, shape, or form. So we had, some corrupted audio files on our last session with a good friend of ours, and probably one of our most hilarious and warm and just all around greatest regulars, our chef Lisa from Good Kind. We're gonna have to get her back, and not necessarily redo it, because it's just really awkward and hard and terrible to try to redo a conversation and have it sound natural. So we'll have to figure something out with her. We already had her partner in business and in crime, in their crime business, just kidding, in their bar and restaurant, Good Kind. Paul Zirkle was with us a few shows ago. And we just thought we'd, you know, at some point get to Lisa and talk about, her side of kind of going from Milwaukee to Portland to Milwaukee and seeing all of the culinary changes across the landscape, between those places. So we'll get there at some point. Today I am flying solo, and you know, I'm just feeling a little inspired to kind of go off the cuff and do this episode here, because as you know, in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee, wherever, if you're up north around the Great Lakes this time of year, these are the shittiest times to be up here. There's usually a little snow, a lot of frigid, take your breath away, cold air. A lot of ice, a lot of slush and frozen slush and gross, not fun winter activity snow, just kind of like Arctic hellscape bullshit here. And I'm sitting in my apartment, which is, it's a third story apartment, so I'm kind of at like rooftop level with a lot of houses in Bayview. And out of my kitchen window, I have a really awesome view of this church steeple. It's the bell tower of the Immaculate Conception Church over on Kinnickinnick and Russell? Logan and Russell? It's got a big yellow dome on it, and I can see it from the home bridge when I drive home from downtown, but... I've always liked that bell tower, and it just, for, I think maybe it's just the color of it, maybe a little bit of the style, just reminds me a little bit of some like Mediterranean, you know, church somewhere. Name one, name 10. It just kind of has that vibe for me for some reason. And on this cold day, staring out at like the sun glinting off of this dome, I'm not crying, I'm just a little congested today, I just kind of, I got wistful for a trip that I took this summer to Barcelona and the Basque Country. And, you know, I just, I thought I'd go back in time a little bit and take you with me. I'm also kind of wistful about it because recently at the shop, we received a big pre-order from one of the vintners that I visited on that trip. Went to the property of Bodegas Bilar in Rioja, and had a lovely, lovely, lovely time. I'm not going to lie, it was really good. And, you know, I came back from the trip, and our guy Guthrie was like just leaving to go work over in the Willamette Valley in August and or September and October. And I was bartending a lot, and people were asking me about the trip. And it's, you know, when you're like at work, you can't really, oftentimes, you can't really just like stop what you're doing and give a detailed kind of play by play or really kind of get into it. Sometimes you can, but my discussions about the trip and questions that people had for me were a little short and a little brief. You know, the wine ain't gonna pour itself, people. But yeah, I just kind of thought, hey, you know, we got this wine in, we should kind of talk about it a little bit. And I just kind of wanted to, you know, maybe give a little day-to-day account of our trip, because it was really fun. And I hope that, you know, if any of you out there are planning on going to Europe this spring, summer, fall, whenever, some of this info might help you. If you're going to Barcelona in particular, or beyond, you know, I have some cool spots that I'll mention today. And if you ever want to know more, please feel free to send us a message on the gram, or, you know, wherever you can. I don't know, leave me a smoke signal from, you know, the lakeshore or something. I guess, you know, before I get into this, I do want to say, I realize that traveling anywhere, especially traveling overseas, is a gigantic privilege, and not all of us Americans are able to do it, or you know, able to do it as much as we would like, or we, you know, feel like we need to. Sometimes doing a trip like this takes a lot of planning, and I personally love the planning part of trips, so I don't mind it. Some people really hate it. This is maybe I can meet you in the middle if you're like a not planner person, but you want like some good some good options or something. This could be cool. We'll see. But yeah, it takes money, it takes time, it takes some dedication, it takes getting a little out of your comfort zone sometimes to do this kind of stuff. And it's not like Spain is some, you know, exotic jungle somewhere where, you know, it's not. It's very cosmopolitan, and they have lots of stores and lots of things there. But travel anywhere is travel, and you know, there's some good things to kind of consider when you're stepping out of your home country and stepping into someone else's. These trips lately to European destinations are, on the whole, there's been tons of deals. And I think that, you know, a lot of it is like they had a whole tourist season that didn't happen because of COVID back in 2020. And a lot of these countries, especially countries that are in the Mediterranean, we're talking, you know, Portugal, Spain, parts of France, Italy, the Balkans, Greece, all the islands in between. These places have really a significant portion of their economies that are dependent on tourism in all of its facets. And that's, you know, that's hotels, it's restaurants, it's bars, it's like rentals and all kinds of stuff. So the deals are happening, and you can find them if you go to a place like Scott's Cheap Flights, or you know, there's like a handful of those kinds of sites now, or you can even just check like Google Flights. You know, we got our tickets. We went on this trip in August of 2021. We bought our tickets in like May, and we got, I mean, we got a pretty good deal. I think it was $490 per person round trip from Chicago to go to Barcelona. So I've seen some deals a little cheaper than that. I've seen some deals a little more expensive than that. But if you go without getting a deal, you could probably expect somewhere around $800 per person round trip from Chicago, just depending. So, you know, look out for those deals. Find the websites that you like. Like I said, there's a bunch of websites now that you can basically subscribe for a year for, you know, $25 or $50, and you get alerts to your email. And really, if you book one flight every couple of years with one of those sites, they more than pay for themselves. So do that. You don't have to give the airlines all your money. Those guys are total a-holes anyway. So wait for a good deal to a place that you want to go to, or a place that maybe you didn't even know you wanted to go to. There's always that. You know, we're very pro travel people at Voyager. Obviously, we named the bar Voyager, and there's tons of maps in there, and you get the idea. We like to travel and eat. So, you know, I always encourage people, get out there. If you have the means, the world wants you to see it. I tend to think that as Americans, our country would probably be a better place to live if more of us were able to go elsewhere and see how other people live, to be a little uncomfortable in someone else's, you know, residence or city or whatever. I think that traveling gives you a perspective on not necessarily like, you know, oh, you know, France does this better than us and Spain does this better than us. And like, yeah, they have things that they're really good at over in those places. But sometimes it's more about like, oh, there's different ways to think about things. There's different ways to do things or enjoy things. And, we tend to get kind of stuck in our own sort of elephant paths here when we are at home for too long. So get out there. You deserve it. America deserves it for you to do this. I think if more of us traveled, you know, maybe there's a reality where Trump wouldn't have been elected, or maybe if we traveled more, we wouldn't have you know, Mexican kids in cages at our southern border, or people in prison for marijuana. Maybe we would be less militaristic. Who knows? It's all about that perspective. So, yeah. Anyway, enough preaching. Let's fly to Barcelona. We got there. Had a pretty decent flight, a little weirdness with Delta, but we did our connections in the States. We connected in New York on our way out and our way in, and I think that that made the trip a bit easier, because there was way less COVID vaccine paperwork to fill out, first and foremost, and probably second most. And yeah, it just seemed a bit easier to do that. We didn't plan it that way, but it happened that way. And you know, after kind of looking into booking other trips since then, it's like, oh, yeah, I think we kind of really lucked out with only having to fill out one set of forms and, you know, whatever. It was fine. So yeah, we got to Barcelona. We were a little jet lagged, obviously, as one is expected to be. We just got a taxi cab straight from the airport to our hotel, which was in the Gothic Quarter of Barcelona. So the probably the oldest neighborhood in the city. We stayed at the H10 Madison, kind of right between the cathedral in the Gothic Quarter and the Opera House. We loved it there. Great location, right by the metro stop. They have a bunch of these hotels, or at least a handful in Barcelona, and maybe throughout the rest of Spain. Check them out. I don't really know much about the company. I haven't really looked them up, but I do know that every hotel that we checked out or looked at from them was really nice. And our room, we had a king-size room. It had, you know, like a little coffee maker and a TV and all this stuff, yada, yada, yada. It had a really nice bathroom with like a walk-in shower with like one of those rain shower spouts on the ceiling. There was a rooftop pool with a rooftop bar and tapas restaurant with 360-degree views of the city. You could see the sea from there. You got like a just crazy awesome view of the like Gothic cathedral a block away, and we really liked staying there. It was great. It was August, which isn't the greatest time to go to Barcelona, but we have kids who were still on summer break, so we just said, you know, whatever, we'll go melt in the heat. Having a rooftop pool was really nice, and having a really nice air-conditioned room was also really good. This place, I mean, it was $81 a night, which is insane. You can't even get a Holiday Inn Express in, like, bumfuck Egypt, Illinois for less than that. So, H10 Madison, I think they also have one. We stayed in one called, like, Ophelia later on in the trip in the Plaza de España. Check them out if you're going to Spain, especially Barcelona. Wonderful hotels, really great deals. I booked ours through booking.com if that helps you, but yeah, really impressed. The breakfast was even like phenomenally good, so you know, get on it. We were in the Gothic Quarter, as I said, lots of like winding alleyways and you know, buildings are close together and it's really romantic. It's beautiful. There's like tapas bars and vermouth bars everywhere. We got there and dropped off our stuff because it was early and decided that we should go find a cannabis club because I thought, you know, hey, we're in Spain. We are on vacation. We've never tried this cannabis stuff, and we should probably check it out. I think it's like what the locals do. And, you know, I like to blend in with the locals whenever possible. So, yeah, we did some research before we left and found a couple places that were by our hotel. We went to one as soon as we got there, and we had an appointment. And then you go check in at this address, and then they like buzz you in to this other room. And we bought some pre-rolls, which were like really ginormous. And then we bought some edibles, like some gummies, and we each took a gummy and started walking toward our first reservation, which was a 11 course lunch at a little place called Cruix or Cruix. I'm not sure how to pronounce it. It's spelled Cruix. And I mean, what better way to spend a jet lagged lunch early afternoon in Barcelona, except, you know, like, when you get, you know, high AF. Actually, I don't think it had kicked in at quite at that point yet, but we enjoyed the lunch. We walked back to our hotel, finally got to check in, you know, showered off, you know, like, got a little nap in. And I think it was when we woke up from the nap that it was like, oh, that's right, we took those edibles earlier, didn't we? We had a reservation at a place that came recommended to me, and also I just kind of, like, I had found it on my own and then gotten a recommendation from someone else, and I was like, okay, this is definitely going to be a place we go to. It's a place called Bar Moot, B-A-R-M-U-T. And this is a little place kind of on the border of, like the southern border of the Gracia neighborhood. And I'm just, as a note, I know I should probably be pronouncing it Gracia or Barcelona. I'll probably switch in and out of that. It doesn't come naturally to me, per se. But yeah, we were at Bar Moot, and we were, like, walking up there, and I was like, oh my God, I'm, like, way too high for this. I've had this reservation for, like, a month. I don't know if I can go in there. Brandis was like, I'm hungry. Let's go eat some food. And I was like, yeah, okay. Like, I'll just, you know, yeah, I'll just be quiet and, you know, try to read the menu and, like, not freak out. And we got in there. We got a little table off to the back. It was really, I don't know, really cozy, really romantic. There were, like, old books and things. And, like, I think right behind me was, like, an old piano. And, like, it just was, had a really cool, like, lived in, you know, lived in sort of vibe to it. I just remember thinking, like, thousands and thousands of people have enjoyed meals in this little tiny room. This is really cool. We had some Grenache Blanc. We had some other food. I kind of remember what some of it was. I kind of don't on some other things. I remember really, really freaking out about how good this particular dish was. It was essentially like scrambled eggs with lobster. And just the eggs were, like, really silky, perfectly done, like, omelet-style eggs, with, like, little, you know, chunks of lobster meat. And, like, the textural journey was really cool. The flavors were great. It paired with our wine really, you know, really lovely-y. I'm, like, going back there mentally right now. I'm like getting stonier and stupider. Yeah, it was pretty wild. We were, like, really, really too edibled out at some point. And we kind of stumbled out of there. It had been a really long day. So we walked back to the hotel, which was a little bit of a hike. But it was a good way to see the city at night. In between us and the restaurant, there's, like this whole kind of, like, big arcade area with shops and, like, a lot of, like, retail shops and clothing stores. Some, like, higher-end stuff, some, like, mid-tier stuff with, like, some little cafes sprinkled in and bars and stuff like that. It was cool to see at night. And it was nice to walk around at night because it had cooled off considerably. So we went back and got a good night's sleep. Woke up the next day and it was going to be our Gaudi day. We wanted to go hit up a bunch of places, and we had some tickets to go into the Sagrada Familia Cathedral. So we started off with, like, our own kind of walking tour. We walked past, you know, the Batlló House and Casa Milà. We walked our way up to Sagrada Familia right on time for our reservation. I was, like, super stoked. this has been a bucket list item of mine for a while. I had been to Barcelona in 2013 and never went inside the cathedral, so I thought this was going to be my year. The only issue is that I had the tickets on my phone in an email, but I couldn't access my email from the cathedral. So I got like some free Wi-Fi off the street, and I was like trying to like download, you know, like get in there. I couldn't find it. And they wouldn't let us in without a reservation. COVID stuff, you know, just kind of everything's a little tighter. Everything, you got to plan ahead a little further. You got to have your shit ready. And you also have to have the ability mentally to say, if there's a mistake, to just say, well, you know, lesson learned, and move on. I was so mad. my spouse was like, dude, go get a beer. I was like, I don't want to get a beer. I want to go inside the church, you know? We couldn't do it. And I went to Taco Bell and I got a beer. And we were like, okay, well, that sucks. But, you know, hopefully we'll come back to Barcelona someday. And this cathedral will actually probably be finished by then. And it'll be cool. We decided then to walk to Park Güell, which is Gaudí's, like, it's like a park that's just all designed by him, and like tiled by him. It's like this garden of tiled structures. It's whimsical, it's fantastical, it feels a little like Greco-Roman, but like absurdist. And it's really a special place. We had maps on our phones and stuff, and we were like, yeah, we can totally walk this, no problem. And we got halfway there from Sagrada Familia and realized that essentially from Sagrada Familia to Park Güell, it's like all uphill. It's like a giant hill. And much of the bottom part of that hill is the neighborhood of Gracia, which is essentially kind of like where a lot of actual, you know, Barcelonans live. It's a little more blue collar. It's like more locals hanging out, enjoying themselves. It feels kind of like a Bayview or a River West. There's a lot of stuff going on the streets. A lot of people just like, you know, eating olives, drinking vermouth, laughing, you know, all that stuff. We were on our way up there, and it was obviously like early afternoon. We were getting a little hungry. We stopped off at this cool little place. We hadn't researched it or anything, but it was a little Mexican joint. And if you've ever traveled to Europe or anywhere else overseas, as an American, we've probably talked about this on a show once or twice, but it's like nearly impossible to find good Mexican food, not in Mexico or not in the US. It's just one of those things. I kind of figured, hey, you know, Barcelona might be one of those places where you can find good Mexican food. So we stopped. It was a little place called Cantina Machito. Super cute. Had like some pink and white striped umbrellas out front with a lot of tiles on the facade. Little tables outside on the sidewalk. And we stopped and had some cold water and ordered some tamales, which were, honestly, I think they were the best tamales I've ever had. No lie. Just really rich and like texturally, like just like, I don't know, the perfect kind of like packed together, like density. Really enjoyed that little pit stop. For what it's worth, you know, we were carrying around, like, you know, fanny packs or bum bags or whatever you want to call them. We generally kind of had them slung over our shoulders. And that's like what I used to carry my phone and like my like wallet and stuff like that. I had it in the front, like right on my chest. There are a lot of pickpockets in Barcelona. You just kind of have to be careful. That's why I didn't have it around my waist. I even, like, maybe I'm crazy, but I even took like a little zip tie, like a black zip tie, and I zip tied the clasp of the fanny pack, so that since I was wearing it on my front, I didn't want anyone to be able to come up behind me and just unsnap it, you know. So I used a zip tie to kind of keep it permanently closed. But when we stopped to eat, it was so hot and we were like already pretty tired from going uphill for about a mile and a half. You know, I put it on the table next to it, like right in front of me, and Brandis put hers on the table, and our server came out there and was like, "Hey, you know, I know it's like the middle of the day and it seems like this is a quiet street, but like, just keep them on you. Like, don't put them on the table." And you know, I'm inclined to listen to the local person if they tell me that. So yeah, we did. But just a word to the wise, if you're traveling to any big city, honestly, shit, man, you could be traveling to Milwaukee and that shit could happen to you. So, you know, always be alert. You can have fun and be relaxed, but, keep your shit on you and, you know, just don't be an idiot. So, we'll get back to more idiot hijinks later in the show. Trust me. Yeah, we enjoyed the tamales. We had some palomas. It was really great. And then we went kind of through the neighborhood more. It was really cool. They were about to have this big thing called the Festival de Gracia, which is a neighborhood festival where, like, block by block, the residents make a theme for their part of the street. Like, they had, like, under the sea themes and, like, balloons and, you know, like, hot air balloons. Then you go to the next street and it's, like, you know, medieval knights, you know, like, or like Game of Thrones banquet kind of, you know, thing. Like, everyone had like kegs of beer and bottles of wine getting out. Like, it was setting up like this huge party, and it was kind of cool to walk through that whole kind of setup process and see it being born. But the last half of the trip through Gracia up to Park Güell, it's still the hill, but it's like an even steeper hill. It's like, it was madness. We eventually got to the top and I was like, oh my God, I am like, I'm spent. Like, I'm going to fall asleep in this park. And you know, you get to the top of it and it's just glorious. We could see where we had started that morning. We could see the cathedral by our hotel, and this towering Gothic masterpiece looked like, you know, my pinky fingernail size. It was very far away. It looked like it was right on the beach. It was so far away. And it was like, oh wow, we really did it this time, didn't we? But we walked around the park, got some cold water, some ice cream, walked around, took some photos. It was great. It was probably one of the highlights of Barcelona for me. The tiles alone are just kind of mesmerizing. Let alone like the shape and just kind of thinking about the construction of it all. It just seems like really insane. So yeah, we had a good time there. We left, we thought, hey, it's all downhill from here. So we went back down into the Gracia neighborhood, and happy hour was just kind of starting. We stopped at a wine bar that had been on my list called Bar Salvaje. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. There's a lot of consonants at the end. But it seemed like a really cool place. From what I had researched, we went in and it was like just totally cool neighborhood style wine bar. You know, wooden table, like high wooden tables, with like bar stools, a lot of wines on draft, big chalkboards everywhere. And they had like kind of like a wrapping retail shelf around the kind of like the, you know, interior wall space in there. The service was like a little lacking, not gonna lie. We both bought a glass of wine and then like never saw the bartender again. but it was also like a really neighborhoody spot, like I said, and there were like, you know, moms with in there with their kids, and like dogs were just like hanging out. And I think the bartender was just like really chit chatty with some of the locals, which I get it. I would do the same thing probably. But I ended up buying a bottle of wine there. It was a Monastrell from a producer named Consuriol. And I bought it because I thought that the producer sounded familiar to me, and I just thought, hey, if we're going to be over here, I know I can't bring back all the wine I want to, but we should at least like drink some wine in our hotel and stuff while we're here. So I grabbed a bottle. It was pretty affordable. And we started making our way back to the hotel. Coincidentally, that bottle is something that we brought in at Voyager later on that summer. In a twist of fate, our friends over at Chromatic were able to get their hands on some of that Monastrell, and we ran it as a glass pour feature for late summer and early autumn. If you were in there, you may have seen me doing like hard like farmer decants on this thing, because it was like super like beautiful red natty juice with lots of like crazy funky barnyardy things going on, but really great like dancey fruit component, and just a really kind of like lovely eclectic label that actually kind of reminded me of some of the animal sculptures at Park Güell. We really, really loved that wine. It was fantastic. And for those of you who are in the wine club who got it, congrats to you. If you haven't enjoyed it already, you know, do so at your leisure. We ended up, you know, getting back to the hotel probably around American dinner time, and had talked to the concierge guy, and he was like, "You walked from here to Park Güell and back, like in this heat? Are you guys crazy?" And we're like, "Yeah, we're totally crazy. We're definitely nuts. We probably should have figured out how to take the metro there." But you know, we did get to walk through a lot of the city and see a lot, and it was really cool. And I'll say this: if you're planning a trip to Barcelona and you're looking at the map and you're studying the map, like I like to do, it's a lot bigger than you think. That night we had dinner at a place called Mont Bar. This was in, I believe it was in the neighborhood of the Passage de Gracia. Small plate, like really, it's not necessarily like a tasting menu place, but like it was kind of fancy. We had reservations for like 9 o'clock or 9:30 PM. There was someone at our table when we got there, so they like put us over at the neighboring restaurant on their like patio, and that restaurant was like, "Yeah, you can just drink your drinks over here until your table is ready over there," which I thought was like really cool, and you know, some restaurant camaraderie going on. I appreciated that. You know, we went over to our table at Mont Bar when it was ready. The food was fantastic. The wine was great. Highly recommend it. Our server was like this totally like wacky, like dude. I don't know what his deal was, but he was a good time. Lots of dirty jokes and like just laughing about stuff. It was cool. After dinner, this has happened at every place that we had dinner so far. After dinner in Barcelona, they offer you this drink called Licor de Herbes de Galicia. And I think that's right. Yeah, that's right. And I had never heard of this before. But it's kind of like an after dinner digestif, but like more like in the chartreuse style. And it's just kind of got like a lot of like herbal components, as the name would suggest. Some sweetness. It's like definitely feels like fortified. And yeah, it's just this pale golden color. And if I've just eaten like a really nice meal or a big meal or something, and someone's like, hey, do you want a little something to sip on afterwards? I'm going to mostly always say yes. And then figure out if I like it or not afterwards. I love this stuff. I just kept saying yes. And I looked for it in some of the shops that we were in, because I wanted to take a bottle back, but I couldn't find, it just didn't, the timing of it all didn't work out, and I couldn't find a bottle. But when I got back to the States, I was talking about this drink with one of our reps, and he was like, oh yeah, we have some of that stuff. It's not the brand that, you know, you're talking about, but we have this spirit. So I can get this at Voyager if anyone's interested in this. I might even just get a little bit because I think it's really cool. The one we have access to is called Licor de Hierbas de Galicia. The maker is Do Ferrero. And this is, they describe it as such. An herbal liqueur macerated with a selection of herbs that impart distinctive color and flavor. The base distillate is Orujo de Galicia. It's produced from vines that are more than 250 years old. And those vines are Albariño vines, the world famous Cepas Veas Albariño. Really low yield grapevines. They double distill this pomace in what is called an alquitara. It's a primitive still most often used in the production of Spanish brandy. It's 70 proof. It's macerated with anise, savory herbs like saffron, chamomile, rosemary, and green walnut. Green walnut. And then it's sweetened with a very specific locally grown cane sugar. It's a very important ingredient in this product. It's like silky in texture. It's served with a little chill on it. You can sub it at like sub, you know, sub it in for chartreuse and cocktails. But this is amazing stuff. I have a little bit here. Yeah, this is making my afternoon a lot better. It's great. It's not like overpoweringly alcoholic. So you can sip on it. I put like a little ice cube in mine, because I like what happens when it opens up a little bit, because it is a little syrupy. It is a little medicinal almost. That cane sugar definitely like makes it a little more viscous. Like you can lick your lips when you're done, and you know it's very present. So yeah, it's something really cool. I just wanted to share with you all, share with the world. I'm just gonna get a few bottles for the shop, and if you're interested, if you want to try it, let your bartender know. We'll probably put it on the menu or in a cocktail at some point. But this stuff's really cool. I love it. If you don't like anise or chartreuse stuff, this isn't going to be for you. I'm sorry. But if you're into the heady stuff, you know, give this a try. It's pretty fun stuff. So yeah, the next day after that, we had a beach day. We went down to Barceloneta. We swam in the sea. We chilled out on the beach with some beers and some anchovy stuffed olives. We went into the Barceloneta neighborhood for lunch after the beach, and we had a bunch of seafood. We had like a octopus thing, and I don't even know what else we had. Some cuttlefish, just squeezing lemons all over everything, and you know, sprinkling paprika dust everywhere. It was great. But it was hot. It was so hot. August in the Med. Woo. Man, it's tough for me. I'm like really pale and pasty. But we had a great time. That night, we just kind of bounced around for dinner. I went to a really cool wine shop called Villa Viniteca, which is in kind of the neighborhood that's on the border of the Gothic Quarter and El Born. This place was kind of like a library with like two levels and like ladders on wheels, but like all wine. And I found some really cool bottles, like some of some local stuff, and snuck them into my suitcase for the return trip. But then after that, we went to, I think, what is probably my favorite place in the world. If I die, I want you guys to like cremate me and then bring my ashes to Bar Brutal in Barcelona. I'm not crying, I'm just congested. And I'm not dying either, as far as I know. But this place was featured on the show Fuck That's Delicious with Action Bronson. And it looked, I mean, he had a great time on his show going there. And I also had a great time with my spouse there. The staff was amazingly laid back and friendly and cool and chill. They were asking me what kind of wine I like, and I just was like, you know, I, yes. I'm in the business. I'm here. I want to try some cool local stuff. I want to try some stuff that I can't get back home. And this dude kind of like suggested a few things, and I picked one. It was like a sparkling Monastrell rosé thing. It was gorgeous. It was just like, it was the perfect bottle. We had some of the best oysters I've ever had in my life there. We had a couple amazing like sheep's milk cheeses, and I think we also had something else I'm like forgetting, but this place looks like if Wes Anderson designed a wine bar for one of his movies. But I'm saying that not in like some like twee hipster way. It just had this like identity that was so unique and so like singular, whatever. But it was just, everything was minimal but like perfect, and rustic but like, you know, current. It was really fun, really cool. We tried to go back every night that we were in Barcelona after that, and they didn't have open spots, so we had gotten lucky. You're gonna want to make a reservation anytime you go there. It's tiny. They are understaffed because of COVID, and it's just that good. Like, you're gonna not want to miss it if you go to Barcelona, so go there. We didn't get like like tossed up or anything too much, because we had an early out the next day. We had to check out. We decided on this trip that it would be cool to spend, you know, a few days in Barcelona. I think we were there for 3 or 4 days, and then go up to the Basque Country and stay in San Sebastian for a few days. So we got up early the next morning, we checked out, and we took a cab to the train station in Barcelona, and I had a rental car reservation, and we were going to rent a car and go up to San Sebastian. So I talked to the guy, I get the keys, we go down to minus four floor of this big garage, find our car, and this car is packed in like a sardine in a tin in this garage, like so much so that like I had to get into the car to pull it out of the spot to open the trunk to put our suitcase and our backpacks in. And as I was doing that, another car was coming down the ramp and I was like in their way. So we quick got in the car and I backed it into the spot so they could get by me. And we never had a chance to really check the car for damages, which is something that I'm usually pretty careful about doing when I rent a car overseas. So we were just kind of flustered. We were like, oh shit, we gotta, let's get out of this garage and, we'll get on the road and let's just get on the road. So Brandis is futzing around with the GPS. I'm circling in this parking garage, going up level by level by level. And, I get to the gate in level minus one. And there's a guy on an iPad just kind of sitting by the gate thing, and he looks like a business dude. And I go up the ramp to the top, and there's people it's near the train station, so there's pedestrians walking past the parking garage door, and this one pedestrian stops, and he starts pointing at the front of the car, there's something wrong with it, At first, I thought maybe he's telling me that one of the tires is flat or something or low. And Brandis was like, yeah, he's there's something wrong with the car. He's trying to talk to you. And I got out of the car and he came up to me and he was pointing at the bottom front of the car, one of the panels. And I got down on my knees and I was looking at it. And I was I don't know what this guy's talking about. This car looks fine. And all of a sudden I hear Brandis scream from the passenger seat, and my first thought was and it was stupid because it makes no sense, but my first thought was I forgot to put the parking brake on and this car is rolling down the ramp into the parking garage, and my heart went into my stomach, and I stood up right away, and she screamed again. She said, "There's someone in the fucking trunk!" sure as shit, the quote-unquote business guy from down the level previous by the gate wasn't a business guy. He was waiting for the guy up top to get me out of the car and distract me while he went into our trunk and pulled out all of our belongings. Now, he didn't realize that my wife was in the car, and he doesn't know her, and he doesn't know that she is maybe one of the loudest people in America. So, you done fucked with the wrong lady, guy. I ran back to the trunk, threatened this guy. He dropped our backpacks and ran back down into the garage, and then I chased off the other guy, and then I threw our backpacks back into the trunk and got in the car and sped out of there, and got on the highway. And I was just floored. I was floored with honestly the the simplicity and the beauty of their con game, first of all, like, bravo. I mean, pretty good. You got generally people who have never been to where they are right at that moment in a vehicle they've never driven. And the con is you get into the trunk quickly and quietly and steal all the stuff, and they never even know that you stole it until they get to their next hotel, you know, 14 towns away. We got really lucky that nothing was stolen, because in those backpacks that almost were taken was, like, you know, my laptop, our passports, I think maybe my wallet was in my backpack. Like, it would have been very hard to vacation or maybe even get home had it not been for the loud pipes of my partner. Loud pipes save backpacks. Keep that in mind. Just bring a Brandis with you if you travel and you're worried about getting your shit stolen. So, like I said earlier, you know, keep track of your shit. You got to keep your shit on you. And I will never make that mistake again. I promise. And we got lucky. We went out and hit the road and traveled northwest towards the Basque Country. And a different ocean, different sea, different water. Different water. Who says that? We went north, and we'll pick up the story after a short break. We understand that you guys really like this podcast. And I mean, what's not to love, right? The witty banter, the off-the-cuff style. Maybe you even love some of the chefs, winemakers, and other culinary personalities that we have on the show from time to time. We also know that all you people out there in Podland love to hear us talk about the amazing wines and cheeses that we feature on the show. Well, I guess to be totally honest, we do often ask ourselves if anyone really, really enjoys listening to other people drink wine. It's kind of like reading about other people having sex. I think we all just, on some level, kind of want to be the person doing the thing, right? So, what if I told you that you could join in? To the wine part, that is. Well, you can. See, Voyager has Milwaukee's coolest and most affordable monthly wine subscription, and it's called Explorers Club. Each month, we showcase a small winemaking region to give you a sense of place, of terroir, and that feeling of escape to somewhere else. Subscriptions can start as low as $49.99 per month and go up to as much as $149.99 per month. And you'll receive a mouthwatering selection of bottles hand-selected by me and our certified sommelier, Guthrie Newman. Members get a free Voyager wine tote bag, their bottles, and detailed notes with the geography, history, tasting notes of the selections, plus pairing suggestions and even some easy recipes to make at home. And that's not all. Explorers Club members get a 10% discount on all retail items at Voyager. We often feature Explorers Club wines on this show, so sign up on our website or the next time you visit Voyager. Pop those corks and explore the world's most interesting wines with us. just kind of jammed out to some tunes. Brandis took a nap. I stopped at a gas station and saw a kid with a Giannis jersey on, and was like, "Yeah, bucks and six," and like realized that, you know, I was in Spain, and this kid was probably just on vacation, like with his parents or whatever, living in this town. It was like, what the hell is this American doing? We drove north and west, and I'll tell you what, you start to really understand why the Basque people are so unique and so kind of like removed from the rest of Europe, because once you get into Basque country, it becomes this like this incredible landscape where like these huge deep mountain valleys just drop out from underneath you, and you're just kind of confronted with these like sheer mountain walls on either side of you, highways that twist and turn around and drop down in elevation and back up, and then you go through these long mountain tunnels, and everything, every valley is just like just this fog, where it's like if God just took like a little sparse cotton ball and like just placed it there for a moment, like, you know, and then you'll see someone's like house or farmstead like perched impossibly on this like mountain face, with, you know, sheep and animals dotted on it, just like grazing and stuff. And it's like, oh my God, where are we? it's astoundingly gorgeous and astoundingly rustic. And I can't imagine taking a horse and carriage through there. Like, no way. It explains a lot why they're also known as great fishermen and great seafarers, because it's probably the best and easiest way to get to the cities and towns in the Basque region is from the coast, not from the rest of Spain or France. So we got to San Sebastian. It's a place that, first off, it's where Spaniards go to escape the heat in summertime. It was easily 20 degrees cooler there during the day. It was probably in the mid-60s, lower 70s during the day. At night, it was nice to, you know, put on a little hoodie or whatever. Yeah, definitely, like, a little bit cloudier weather. This is Atlantic Spain. Well, Atlantic Basque country, but totally different weather patterns and things like that. The thing that San Sebastian is really known for, well, a few things. They have generally, regularly, the number one rated beach in all of Spain. It's La Concha Beach. It's shaped like a crescent moon. And there's like a little island you can swim out or paddle out to. And it's got like a cool little restaurant bar on it and stuff like that. But San Sebastian is also known for its amount of amazing restaurants. Like, per capita, it has, I think, more Michelin stars than anywhere else in the world. And it's kind of like the birthplace and home of the pincho, which is the Basque version of a tapa, but usually a little bit more orchestrated or composed. Like, there's generally like a tapa to me is like, you know, you go, like, if you're in Barcelona, you get a tapa, it's like some padrón peppers with salt, or, you know, some jamón, or, you know, whatever, some olives. You go to Basque country and you get pinchos, you get things that are like, oh, this is like a crostini with like this charred squid thing on it. And then, you know, there's like some cheese. And there's like all these like different components. And you can essentially kind of like just bar hop and eat amazing like seafood and other snacks. And it's just, if you're an eater, if you're an adventurous eater, and you like to party, go to San Sebastian. It's not exactly cheap to stay there, because it is kind of like resorty almost, or it's like, it's a getaway place. But you can find good deals in hotels. The food, you know, if you're grazing along, doing like some kind of like pincho bar hopping scenario, you're good. It's pretty affordable and it's really fun. It's a great way to meet people. If you go during the pandemic, it's a little different. It's not quite as convivial. Part of the draw for the pincho stuff is that typically you go into a place and you cram up to the bar and you elbow where you're in and you start ordering snacks and pointing at stuff that's made, ordering stuff from a chalkboard. You get a glass of wine or chocolate and or cider or something, and you know, when you're done with your napkin, you throw it on the ground, and it's like really hyper casual with really great food. During COVID, it's a little different. Generally, you had to wait for a table or have a reservation or be willing to wait in a epically long line. There's a couple places there that are more famous than others, and I've been to those places before, but on this trip, the lines were so long that we just decided to like explore other places that were a little less full, just to make sure that we could like have what we wanted, you know. And I think it was cool to do that. I enjoyed it. There's not like a ton. I don't know. Like, it's just, I think it's a place that you go to kind of relax. We did some hiking up a mountain and found this really cool kind of like hipster bar up on this like lookout point overlooking the whole city and like the beach and the bay. And like, it was just like a bunch of like younger people just hanging out. Like, there's like a little cocktail and beer bar up there, and like people are just smoking joints and like drinking beers and chit chatting. They all looked really cool. And I was like, man, if I was here in my mid-20s, maybe I'd blend in. But I feel like a parent right now. I'm a cool parent, but a parent nonetheless. But yeah, it was cool. We didn't really like stay up there too long. We ended up going back down to the harbor and having some food there. And then we found this like just kind of like dive bar, which was really fun. This dude was bartending. He looked kind of like Katie's mom's husband Jack, but like a little more like I don't want to say rock and roll, but like this dude, he looked maybe a little older than Jack, but like he was playing like all these like Rod Stewart music videos super loud, and like basically you just go in there and you just like drink gin and tonics all night. We had like the most gigantic gin and tonics ever. Spanish gin is beautiful. Gin is kind of like a thing there, so another component of your drinking and dining in Spain and you know, the countryside. Hit that gin. Learn to like gin if you don't already. The next day, we had an appointment. When I travel, I'm like a go-getter. When I travel, I want to see everything I could possibly see. So we had made an appointment with a winemaking couple who had been to Voyager earlier in the summer. And they had invited us. They heard that we were going to San Sebastian. And they invited us to come down to see their vineyard in Rioja. And prior to this trip, I guess I had never realized that, like, part of Rioja was in Basque Country. I always thought it was, like, a little further south. But it's kind of, like, right there-ish. It was about an hour, maybe an 80-minute drive each way, as far as I can remember. Maybe it was 2 hours each way. I'm not sure. But either way, we got in our little car and took a day trip south and passed through all those mountain valleys, misty mountain hop. And then at some point you go and you're like just valley after valley, fog after fog, and you go through this mountain tunnel and you come out the other side and it's like desert. It's so weird. It's still kind of mountainous and rocky, but like you feel like you just went from like the Battle of Evermore to like somewhere in Arizona. And it was a real kind of head trip. But yeah, it was in a part of Rioja called Alavesa. It's the more northerly part of Rioja. And, we set out looking for Bodegas Bilar. And I'll say this, I'm not really the world's biggest fan of a lot of Rioja wines. I know that a lot of people like them. I get it. It's generally Tempranillo, probably blended with a couple other red grapes and then made in kind of like a Bordeaux style. Prior to this trip, it would take a lot for me to really get into, to a Rioja wine. Obviously there are producers that we love, and among those is Bodegas Bilar. Really from the jump at Voyager, we've been really, digging their stuff. So by no means am I saying Rioja wine sucks. I just, you got to sort through a lot of bad Rioja wine to get to the good stuff. And Bilar makes the good stuff. But I'll say this, driving through the countryside and through some of these little towns full of like little wine bars and bodegas and things like that, it was like, damn, like this is cool. Like this landscape is like kind of Mars-ish, but kind of medieval in this weird way. And like, there's just this huge like wall of mountains behind you. And like, it was just breathtakingly gorgeous. And we finally got to their property and, Melanie Hickman, the wife of David San Pedro, they're a winemaking duo. They greeted us in the driveway. We went inside, we checked out some stuff, and they were like, hey, we should show you the vineyard. So we drove out into some of the vineyard plots that they have in LVR, and we got to walk through vineyards and taste grapes, and we were helping, you know, prune some branches back and move some things along trellises. And what they do there is really special. Not only do they do everything biodynamically at Bodegas Bilar, but they are also actively rehabilitating the landscape. You know, when I say you have to sort through tons of bad Rioja wine to get to the good stuff, it's because Tempranillo became like this, like cash crop essentially in Rioja. I think it was probably in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, and these big companies were buying up wineries and buying up land. They were like extending the boundary of what could be called, you know, Rioja this or whatever, and basically just kind of like flattening the ground, literally like flattening the earth to like plant more vines. For David San Pedro and his family, who have been wine growers in Alavesa for since the 1940s, you know, they kind of, you know, his father taught him, like, this was not the way to make wine. You have to, you know, be in balance with nature and the land. And David and Melanie have spent their lives, certainly since, you know, since they met each other, trying to reclaim some of the contours of the landscape. They will buy back small plots from big corporations and, like, actually kind of like try to reform the natural contours of land and grow vines in such a way to, like, you know, stop erosion from happening and all these things. They also, in addition to being biodynamic farmers, they only use a horse and plow to till the soil. And they use this, like, you know, they hire on this, like, really old-timer guy with his horse, and it's like he's training his son to do it too. So, like, you know, just being gentler with the landscape, being more in tune with nature, is kind of what they do at Bilar. We got back. Oh, they also have, like, a Neolithic, Bronze Age, early Bronze Age burial site, on one of their properties called the Witch's Hut. And apparently, on certain nights of the year, there are still some local folks who perform dances and rituals around this, this kind of dolmen structure, which I really get into. My archaeology nerd side gets really, wound up about things like that. But anyway, we were driving back toward the house, and they offered to make us lunch, and I'm not going to turn down a lunch, especially if I'm, like, in the middle of nowhere and, you know, I'm in someone else's graces. We got some bread from the little village, and then, David and I went back to the yard and took a bunch of bushels of, like, old, dried grapevines and, like, cuttings, and made a fire, out of those. And then he grilled off, a pig's face, some chorizo, some, like, little ribs, like, rib things, and, some Marcia blood sausage. And, we took some fresh tomatoes off the vine from the garden, some veggies, some greens, made a salad, and we went inside to eat this amazingly rustic, just, like, smoky, meaty lunch. And we got to try tons of their wines. They brought out probably a bottle of everything that they make, and we just kind of sipped and ate and sipped. Their little boy was home from school. He's, like, the same age as our little boy. So, like, we were, you know, it was kind of like being at our dream home. Their residence is beautiful. It looks like something out of Dwell magazine. And the window in the living room overlooks this valley, and you see this village down in the distance with, like, a big church steeple and stuff like that. See, I'm all about the church steeples today. I don't know what my deal is. Maybe I'm just feeling guilty, or maybe I need to, I don't know. Maybe I just need to get my bell rung. I'm not sure. Anyway, we had a lovely lunch. It was delicious. I didn't wake up that morning thinking that I was going to be eating a pig's face. I'll say this, certain parts of the face are better than others. Everything, though, that you'll eat in Spain is delicious if they drench it in Spanish olive oil. And that was also a surprising aspect of the trip. For those of you who know me, you know that I'm, like, a huge, like, Italophile. I love all things Italian. And I maybe converted to being a Spanish olive oil lover during this trip. Don't tell my Italian friends that, but it was just better. In like every way possible, it was just better. We ended up, they ended up giving us a bunch of open bottles. And I was like, well, I don't know what to do with these because we only have a few more nights left of this trip. And I certainly can't put an open bottle of wine into a suitcase or anything. So we drove back to San Sebastian. We had a dinner reservation that night at a little place just south of the river there. And it was called Jan Edan, J-A-N-E-D-A-N. And it was kind of like a chef's table type coursed out restaurant. Mostly all seafood, and we just brought a bunch of those open bottles from Bodegas Bilar, and, you know, we walked in, we said, hey, like, we're just gonna donate these all to the kitchen staff tonight, or whoever wants them. We opened these with the winemaker a few hours ago, and, some of those bottles were, like, really nice, like, kind of, like, I mean, a couple of the reds were, like, pretty pricey. Not, like, out of this world, but definitely, like, something you'd want to think about before you bought it. I'm actually enjoying one of them right now. I should have probably done this during the Bilar segment I just did, but whatever. This is from their Fincas line. This is a 2016 white wine from Rioja. It's true. They do have white wine there. It's not all Tempranillo. And this is, they made 2,520 bottles of this wine. So barely anything was made, which is pretty cool. Pouring it into the glass, this is like, this looks like Belgian beer colored almost. It's like orange and pretty clear. It looks pretty clear, but definitely very, very ambery orange in color. This is called, on their website, it's called Thousand Milks. But on the bottle, it says Thousand Mills, like a thousand thousandths or something. I'm not sure which is right. And I didn't realize that there was a discrepancy when I ordered. I'm thinking maybe they changed the name of it after 2016 or something like that. They say that this is a provocative wine of a thousand varieties, a thousand sensations. And I'm about to see about that. Here goes. Wow. It's still sustaining. Really long finish on this. Really long and dry and just complex. Wow, it's like still changing on my palate. It's really weird. I love it when that happens. On the nose, I'm getting a lot of like warm orchard fruit. Like spiced pears, some Macintosh apple, a little cinnamon vibe, maybe. Like, it's like a little bit like some, like, you know, like apple pie kind of baked pear thing on the nose, which is, I, you know, it makes sense with the color. It's, it looks almost like autumnal. It's so orange. There's a little bit of melon in there, like a musk melon, And I'm just trying to see like what happens as it kind of opens up a little bit. Yeah, that just smells like, it smells like a thousand fruits. It's definitely dense on your tongue. And it's definitely got a lot of acid. But it's in balance with the fruit for sure. It kind of finishes off with some more of those orchard fruit vibes, but like more like with more of the acid on the backbone. So think like more like green apple, just underripe pear, some stone fruit, and slight kind of tropical fruity notes on the finish. And that finish is like just insane. It's just mind-blowing. I've never tried this. Well, I think I tried this when I was there, but I haven't tried it since, and I've certainly never tried it while doing a podcast at the same time. But this is phenomenal, and I would encourage all of you to go to Voyager and get it, because I don't think I was able to get that much of it because the production was so small. But the 2016 is the current vintage, so you can imagine what, you know, 5-6 years with a skin contact white is going to do. It's just drinking amazingly, amazingly well. That finish is like just, it's like almost like salty sherry, or like bitter orangey. Ugh, it's just, this is like my jam. I'm really impressed with this wine. If you're listening to this and your mouth is watering, do yourself a favor, go online to our website, go to our online store, and just snag one or two of these if you can. All of our Bodegas Bilar stuff should be up there. And you really can't lose. There's some really affordable options like the Lagrimas de Graciano, which is a red. That's kind of like their entry-level red that we have anyway. We have a couple other ones by them. I think we have a Fincas red. And then we have like a really kind of like big boy aged red. I think it's the Sexto. That one's pricey, but it's really limited, and we could only get a few of them. Support this family, you guys. This is like just phenomenally made wine, made by people who care about the land and are trying to bring Rioja back to being a more conscientious place to make phenomenal wines. I will continue to be a big fan of these producers. Get on the store and buy the stuff. It's insane. And I hope the staff at Jan Edan and San Sebastian also felt the same. I think they did. They sent out a bottle of a sparkling Chocolina for us, and I think we ended up ordering one or two more bottles throughout the dinner because that was so good. Just a lot of like really great wine love over there. Yeah, wow, goddamn this wine. So yeah, we eventually, you know, we did have to take a COVID test. We decided to do it in San Sebastian because we were gonna drive back to Barcelona, drop off the car, and then have one more night there. So we just thought it'd be easier to do a rapid test in San Sebastian since it's much, much smaller, which was a great idea. We ended up getting our results back before we even left town and headed back down to Barcelona. And yeah, we went back, we stayed in a different hotel. We stayed at the Ophelia near the Plaza de España. Again, same company, H10, I believe. This room was even nicer than the one we had. I didn't like the location as much, but the room was nicer. And yeah, we, again, it was still, I think it was like $86 for a night stay there, which was insane. We ate dinner that night at another kind of fancy place that had been on my list called Fils Muller, which is a restaurant that originally started in Madrid, and they have a location in Barcelona now. But this place was like also just bonkers, delicious. I have some photos from this whole trip on my personal Instagram page, but I might put some on the podcast page just on Instagram so you can see it. But razor clams were amazing. We had some like ribs that were like just stellar. I like should look on my phone to remember some of this stuff. It was just all super fun. Like the way that everything was presented was kind of like, it's meant to look like one thing, but it's something different. That's a really just dumb thing to say, I guess. But yeah, some like the oysters there were great. The thing for me there, and I'm not usually a dessert person, but we got the cheesecake, and oh yeah, the cheesecake. And it like it took my brain and just like squeezed out all of the juice and like ripped it in half and then like stuffed it back into my skull. It was like that good. This is a cheesecake that has like the graham cracker crust on the bottom, has a cheesecake layer just above that. The middle layer is like melted blue cheese with another regular cheesecake layer on top, with then a bruleed glassy layer of sugar as the top. So you like smash it like a creme brulee with your spoon, and then the middle like oozes out this like liquid blue cheese sort of thing. There's no like mold veins in it or anything. It's cream colored like the rest of it. It's just a different texture and a different flavor, like a savory flavor. I don't know. I probably peed in my pants a little. It was so good. Just looking at this picture right now, I'm like, I'm actually about to cry and not be congested. A phenomenally amazing dinner there. I cannot recommend Fils Muller enough. If you're traveling probably to Madrid or Barcelona, you should go check them out. It was a great time. We flew out the next morning, and that was that. It was a whirlwind trip, but we ate well. We slept well. We saw cool stuff. We talked to cool people. You know, we lived to tell the tale. It's nice to look back on some of those hot August memories and really try to, you know, give you guys a sense of some of the fun times we had there. Anyway, as usual, I've gone on far, far too long. Valentine's Day is coming up, y'alls. And I think that, I'm just going to throw this out there, I think wine is a great gift idea for the lover in your life. Sometimes, you know, you want to give somebody a bottle of bubbly or whatever, and you know, maybe you just got to get some of that booty. Maybe, you know, you want to give this gift of wine to someone because you guys see each other a lot, and sometimes people just need to fucking take a break from each other and enjoy some wine. I don't know, man. It's all good. We have gift certificates. We have snacks you can gift people. I have pottery there that, you know, you're welcome to pick up and touch and buy and whatever. I'll be dropping off some more planters and bud vases and things like that in the coming week or two. Check out the online store. You don't even have to really come in. We can get the order in for you, bag it up, and have it ready for you to pick up whenever you want. Stay tuned for some V-Day kind of festivities. All this oyster talk has got me really thinking about some oysters on the half shell and some crispy wine. So stay tuned for that. It's good to be back. And as always, thanks for listening. Chef's kiss.